Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Fantasy Team Advice Football Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to Fantasy Team Advice's 19th Fantasy Football Podcast. Tonight, we're joined by a special guest, Brandon Niles. Brandon writes for 4for4.com and 2guyspodcast.com. That's the number 2guyspodcast.com. And he can also be found on Twitter. His Twitter handle is at 2guysbrandon. And I'd like to welcome Brandon to the show. Brandon, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, Brandon, I can hear you. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Thank you so much for having me on, David. I'm really, really excited to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you, man, and welcome. This is number 19, so we've got this thing going for a couple seasons now, and it's starting to grow slowly. But happy New Year, since I haven't spoken to you before, and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, very excited, and I've listened to a couple of your recent episodes, since I heard about you, and looks like you're doing a great job, and really enjoy the information that you put out there.
I appreciate that very much, and we have surmounted a couple of technical snafus in the process, and we're working on it. But anyway, let's jump right in. Well, let's jump right in. Number one, let's just, you know, off the fantasy topic for a second, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on that Calvin, you know, what happened to be a reference to the Calvin Johnson maintaining possession to the ground rule and how it was applied to the Packers and the Cowboys game. Personally, I happen to think it's a bad rule, you know, but unfortunately that's what we've got. And under that rule, it was not a catch. And, you know, we mentioned, KJ and I were talking about this, by the way. KJ Johnson is the owner of the website and, you know, has put forth this podcast as a format to, you know, to continue, you know, expanding the site. And he was talking about it as the Calvin Johnson maintaining possession to the ground rule. I personally think that this started, you know, before Calvin Johnson's non-touchdown touchdown. It was like back in the day, the Jets were playing, this is when the Dolphins had Ray Lucas as the quarterback. And he made it past to Chris Chambers, who caught the ball, and I was like, you know, I'm a Jet fan, so I'm freaking out. Oh, we're going to lose this game, blah, blah, blah. And Chris Chambers, you know, got tackled out of the back of the end zone, landed on the ground, and that ball kind of rumbled in his cradled arm there for a second. And Herman Edwards challenged the play and came back, and it was no catch. And before that, Bert Emanuel may have started it all when he actually caught the ball with both hands, and as he was going to the ground, the ball touched the ground. And they, you know, I think those two plays were the impetus for the rule, and the Calvin Johnson thing was just something that happened, bang, bang. Either way, it has really just confused me, and I think, you know, pretty much everyone I watch football with as to what is and what is not a reception. I think if the ball touches the ground, even if you've made the reception, it's incomplete. But I'm old school. What do you think?
You know, I'm kind of go back and forth on this. I'm really impressed with your memory going back to Bert Emanuel. I remember Bert Emanuel as a dynasty fantasy pick that worked out for me. But I'm actually a Dolphins fan. So I remember that Ray Lucas throw to Chris Chambers a little bit more than I remember the Emanuel one. And I go back and forth on the rule because I agree that sometimes it can cause confusion as to whether or not the receiver has possession, what exactly is a football move, what does it mean when the ball hits the ground. They just changed the rule a couple of years back saying that the ball can touch the ground as long as it's not helping the receiver actually gain possession. My big problem with changing the rule at this point, and I saw this Dez Bryant catch, which would have been amazing. My big problem is that right now this rule is in play to keep those bang-bang plays from becoming fumbles. And if we change the rule, it's going to increase the amount of subjectivity that goes on for the refs. And I tend to be a little bit hesitant to endorse rule changes that increase subjectivity from the referees. I get it. My big issue with this whole play is, why did Tony Romo throw a fly route to a covered guy on 4th-and-2 with the game on the line? That's what I didn't know. It just baffled me. I like Romo, and I get that Dez was one-on-one, which is a gamble I'll take 9 times out of 10. But that was definitely the 10th time out of 10 for me. You throw it short and you go that fly route later on, not a low percentage completion on 4th and 2.
Telling you, you have Dez Bryant one-on-one against what has been a pretty bad secondary all year long. And I'm thinking, oh, that's probably not a bad look right there. And he's incredible. I mean, I'm not a Cowboy fan by any stretch, but Dez Bryant is an incredible player. And I was just like, if you've got that and, you know, you're feeling it, why not take the shot? And, you know, they called it a reception on the field, and I guess they saw enough of it to want to go, you know, to want to overturn that. And I agree, because that ball did touch the ground. He got like 3 feet down and then reached, and then the ball came out. So I thought the Cowboys may have gotten a little job there, but again, per that rule, that is not a reception. And the subjectivity gets, I think with the rule, the subjectivity gets even further out there, because you'll have a reception in bounds, and if you land out of bounds, you could land like 10 feet out of bounds, and you know, and that ball comes loose a little bit, you bang into somebody or something, a cameraman, whatever's over there, and that's going to affect what the what the decision is, as far as what, you know, or that'll increase the subjectivity factor as to what is and was not a reception. So it's all that extra stuff. I think it's hard enough to ref one of these games as it is, but boy, I don't know. I think that's going to be a thing that they need to talk about at the owners' meetings or the rules committee or something, because that's, if the ball touches the ground, it's not a reception, that's the end of it, and maybe we can get back to old school again and we'll know what it is once more. But I don't know. I'm not anticipating the positive outcome there.
You know, they change rules a lot based on these types of situations. You know, we got this overtime rule for the playoffs purely because we saw a situation where Peyton Manning didn't get the ball. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if, because Dallas loses like this, we get a new rule. You know, Tom Brady, we have the Tom Brady injury rule. You know, there's all sorts of rules that pop out. Wouldn't be surprised to see the Dallas Cowboy reception rule come into play. And you certainly don't need to be a Cowboys fan to appreciate the type of talent that Dez Bryant brings to the field, especially when it comes up to going up and get the ball. The guy's a freak.
He's one of the best. We've seen so many great receivers lately with, I'm talking about in the last 10, 12 years or so with Andre and Calvin. And Dez is right up there with all of those guys. I can't believe it. Just watching him is just remarkable. Anyway, you mentioned Peyton Manning there, and let's go to Denver for a moment. With John Fox departing Denver, I guess they just decided to part ways because anything short of Super Bowls is not good enough or something. So, and the news is that Peyton Manning was playing through a bad quad injury the past month or whatever it was, and I don't know if it was the half a block he tried to make in that one game, but, you know, how will you be evaluating the Broncos' skill players heading into 2015? I mean, what if Peyton doesn't return to Denver?
Well, if Peyton doesn't return to Denver, then I think it absolutely makes a big difference as to field position players there. You know, you're going to get targets that go around. You're going to have a guy, assuming they re-sign Demaryius Thomas, who's kind of their big free agent going into the offseason, along with Julius Thomas, the tight end. Demaryius Thomas, you got to think enough targets will go his way to where he'll still be an elite fantasy receiver. But those secondary targets, I'd sure be worried about with Brock Osweiler slinging it back there. Emmanuel Sanders, Julius Thomas, I'd be concerned about. Wes Welker. These are guys I'm less convinced about. I mean, we saw Eric Decker, who I know was banged up a little bit this year, but we saw him look like a different player this year in that Jets offense with Geno Smith and Michael Vick throwing the ball. I can't imagine Brock Osweiler coming in and putting up the same kind of numbers.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I thought that, at the time they did the draft, I thought Brock Osweiler was a good, hedge for the future for them, and I'm not sure that Elway's necessarily feeling that. And, the Peyton retirement conundrum, or the Peyton can't play conundrum, may be too much for him to withstand, and he just may go quarterback in the draft. If you look at the free agents as to what are out there, it's pretty rough. So, but both Demaryius and Julius are free agents. I think that Monty Ball has been supplanted by C.J. Anderson, and to a large extent, Ronnie Hillman, who was playing well, if he could just hold on to the darn football. I think it'll be tough. Yeah, I'm telling you, he's got talent, but boy, that's a problem. I watched a lot of Denver football this year, and I just, when he was going good, you know, it was a game against, I think it was the Jets even. He got a long gain on a big play. The Jets were coming back in this game. He fumbled the ball. The Jets were down by, I think, less than a touchdown at that point. And it was like getting, it was definitely in the second half. And the ball bounced right into Wes Welker's hands. Like, how lucky was that? You know, I mean, you know, but that, he loses that ball and they lose that game and he probably doesn't see the field again. But, you know, I think it's going to be tough for Monty Ball to make it back to fantasy relevance, much less any significant touches. But, you know, they'll probably try Monty one more time. And, you know, I think the offense, will, you know, with Brock Osweiler, the offense will definitely take a step back. But depending on how they re-sign guys, I am not so sure. And just about 5 seconds ago, I cut you off. You were saying something. Do you still have that thought?
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, and we've seen players much more talented and much with much more pedigree than Monty Ball lose snaps for those same reasons. He's going to have to learn to carry that ball higher.
Oh, my God. I'm telling you. But, the, you know, to me, Denver, if Denver can keep the defense together in some semblance of order, and I really, you know, Jack Del Rio is being considered for head coaching jobs, and I don't think that that defense, with what they have there, you know, when you consider Knighton and Von Miller and Aqib Talib, Chris Harris, who was supposedly the best rookie, you know, according to a couple of pundits, was the best, was the best cornerback this year. They had a pretty darn good rookie cornerback in Bradley Roby, Raheem Moore. I mean, that's a good defense, and I don't think they played up to it this year. And you know, I'm not so certain that John Elway would be disheartened if Jack Del Rio and the whole coaching staff took a hike here. I think he's looking for something more than they got.
It does seem like they underachieved a little bit. We saw it in the title game. We saw T.J. Ward give up a big play. We saw Aqib Talib just kind of get schooled by T.Y. Hilton, which is something that we didn't see most of the year. We saw him drawing interference penalties. We saw him giving up plays. And we saw DeMarcus Ware. We saw him fail to really get handled by Anthony Costanzo, which is not – Anthony Costanzo is a good player, but he's not the kind of player that you expect to contain a DeMarcus Ware. So, no, I agree with you. And, you know, I tell you, Jack Del Rio just seems like a Raider to me. It just makes sense if the Raiders go and hire him. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a whole new coaching staff. They might elevate Adam Gase, but I wouldn't be surprised to see a whole new group there.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Moving on, my favorite thing about fantasy football, I'm going to say one of my things, my favorite thing about fantasy football is dynasty. And, you know, I don't know what the exact definition of dynasty is. I mean, the true dynasty players who have rosters of, like, you know, 16 or more, those guys laugh at anything less than, like, you know, like 10 or 9 or whatever the number is. And, you know, a four-keeper league to them, they treat just like a redraft. But, you know, I'm thinking like probably six keepers or more is the number where you start getting into the importance of those rookies coming in. They start to take precedence over whatever available talent may have been cut from other teams in the league. And, you know, with that said, my writings and my take and my angle of attack here on KJ's Fantasy Team Advice site is mostly from a dynasty perspective. And, you know, jumping right into this 2014 class, which, you know, the receivers were just like off the chart great. But a little under the radar was the quarterback play. So this wasn't like the days where you know you're going to take Andrew Luck and RG3 early. Not that RG3 necessarily has worked out so far. But, you know, those kinds of drafts where you get a quarterback where you know he's going to, you know, a rookie quarterback, you know, is going to go pretty darn high. And in most, like, keeper leagues that I'm involved with anyway, this quarterback class didn't get drafted till either the middle or the late of the draft or not at all. And, you know, we have it situated where I guess in order of performance being, you know, from good to not so good was Teddy Bridgewater, Derek Carr, Blake Bortles, and at the way down at the bottom of the list is Johnny Manziel. And my question to you is, you know, since you have experience with that 4-for-4 site, which I really like, which ones are worth targeting in Dynasty going forward? And who do you think will be, you know, in that top range, maybe not the top half, but, you know, maybe a little better than that, maybe like, say, top 12 or better from like by 2017? There's, you know, there's lots of teams that are looking for quarterbacks. God knows I'm a Jet fan, so. That they're one of them, you know, and Buffalo is in that division. I could probably name at least 20 teams that are looking for quarterbacks, it seems. So anyway, and, you know, Cleveland right now has real problems. Is, you know, Johnny's Manziel is, you know, even admitted he's, you know, I think the exact quote was, yes, I need to take my job more seriously or something like that. But that's unbelievable because even rookies nowadays, it's not the money it used to be, but they're still getting paid seven figures. And I'm just wondering what your take on the quarterback situation is, and if you would be so kind as to rank them in your pecking order for me. For us.
Sure. You know, I think you're absolutely right. In dynasty formats, which is a very fun fantasy format that I really enjoy as well, going to be a thick quarterback class. Like you said, all those four quarterbacks, and I'll throw Zach Mettenberger, the strong-arm gunslinger in Tennessee, I'll throw him in there too. But those five guys, most of them weren't drafted. None of them entered the season as starters. They were all considered guys that were going to be fighting for a job or sitting for a year. That was, Derek Carr. Nobody thought he would take over Matt Schaub. Teddy Bridgewater, people thought might play. Blake Bortles was supposed to sit the whole year. Johnny Football lost out to Brian Hoyer, who played well the year before. And Zach Mettenberger was behind Jake Locker, who Tennessee still thought would do well. And then you got a rookie class coming in where Marcus Mariota from the Ducks and Jameis Winston, Florida State, those guys probably going to start at Tampa Bay and Tennessee, which I guess would get rid of Mettenberger. And guys like Brent Hundley could end up in Denver. Connor Cook can end up with the Jets. These are guys that are going to come in and get a chance to start. Like you said, teams need them. So I like it. I love Teddy Bridgewater. I think Teddy B has North Turner, just kind of a quarterback guru, not a head coach, but a proven offensive coordinator. So he's a little kind of head and shoulders above the rest. The guy completed over 64% of his passes last year on a team that was really lacking up front and lacking in weapons once Cordarrelle Patterson disappointed everyone and ruined three of my fantasy leagues. But
Dude, I offered tons for anyway, keep going. I'll tell you about that in a second.
But so I love Teddy B. He's the guy, if I'm hedging on any of those guys to be a top 15, top 10 fantasy quarterback in the next couple of years, I think it's going to be Teddy Bridgewater. After that, I think Derek Carr and Blake Bortles, you could really look at in a similar light. Both of them are going to run new systems this year. Carr is going to run a new head coach, entirely new offense, and Blake Bortles is going to get a new offensive coordinator yet to be determined. Both of these guys showed flashes. Derek Carr threw for 3,270 yards this year. He threw 21 touchdowns. That's a nice rookie year, especially for the Oakland Raiders, where your top targets, Rod Streeter, Andre Holmes. You know, these are very encouraging to see Derek Carr. And then Blake Bortles, you see the great and you see the bad with him. You see him look like Ben Roethlisberger, and you see him look like DeMarcus Russell with that scatter arm. So those
exactly.
guys, I think your risk-reward, I like hanging on to him. I like going with him. And then I'm done with Johnny Football. The guy threw a party the Friday night before the last game of the season. You can't wait a week, Johnny. I was a really dumb kid when I was his age, all right? I was living in the dorms. I was in the Air Force. I drank a lot. I was a really dumb kid. And even I didn't do that. That's a really dumb thing. And a blatant disrespect for the opportunity he's been given. I'm done with him. I'm done with Johnny Football.
Well, I tell you, that is a level of unawareness, of professional unawareness like I've never seen. I mean, he goes to a team. He's drafted late in the first round by Cleveland. They've already got a really good offensive line. I know they lost Alex Mack, but the line was still pretty good. I mean, definitely the running game wasn't what it was to be if Alex Mack had stayed. You know, it stayed healthy. But, you know, when you look at those receivers, you know, you're talking about a rookie coach, basically a rookie coaching staff, you know, more or less. You've got two rookie running backs. They got rid of Ben Tate early. You've got, you know, a rookie quarterback who's fighting. You've got Brian Hoyer, who really didn't have that much of a body of work, you know, speaking before he got hurt the year before. I think he played like two games or a game and a half before he got hurt or something. You had Josh Gordon, a young player who's out with his own problems. And, you know, Johnny Manziel comes to a situation where he could really, you know, have a chance, the opportunity to solidify something really good for himself and you know, if he's the real deal. And from the get-go, his behavior was a gigantic question mark. And I'm telling you, I am a believer in this thing that I think past performance predicts future behavior pretty much 100% of the time. And I, unless there is an immediate, you know, come to the Lord kind of moment for Johnny here, or a situation where he sits down with Mike Pettin and just gets read the riot act, and he's going to be out of football before he even has a chance to show anything. And that's a big problem there. I really agree with that, with what you're saying.
I agree.
Knucklehead behavior, that just, yikes.
I agree. And maybe his playmaking ability and that gutsiness that he shows on the field will one day overcome it. But even the NFL right now, and to be honest, he's not good enough to be a knucklehead. He's just not good enough to do it. He's got overwhelming size limitations. He doesn't throw his receivers open. He has some serious problems on the field, too. And if he's this much of a knucklehead off the field, is he going to put the time in and the effort in to become an NFL-caliber quarterback? And I think after year one, I think that's a demonstrable no.
I agree with you there. Now, moving on, we got, again, with the, keeping Dynasty in mind, I've got a little, thing I do usually, I try to get it in weekly, but, usually we run out of time because we're schmoozing football and we love to do it so much and we only have a half an hour. But I got a sell high, buy low, or keep situation with, I usually do this with a handful of different players. I mean, and I know the list I put together for us here tonight is, it seems a little obvious what you do with respect to keeping them, but, I mean, there's a couple guys on the list that are they're a little bit questionable. I'd like you to just, run through it with me. In order of my likes, I've got, and this is going forward now, and this is not just what happened in the past 16 weeks or 17 weeks. This is going forward now. I've got Odell Beckham, Mike Evans, Kelvin Benjamin, Carlos Hyde, Sammy Watkins, Brandon Cooks, and Chris Sims. If you just riff for a little bit on that for me, if you would, as to what you would do there, with your dynasty cap on, Brandon, if you would, please.
Sure. Yeah. In dynasty leagues, as a rule, I love young receivers. It's just kind of what I do because young receivers, they usually break out second and third year. This year we got a bunch of guys who broke out in year one. So it's hard to gauge how many of these guys are going to be Mike Williams from Tampa Bay, who comes out and looks like a perennial all-star and then fades into oblivion afterwards. And then how many of these guys are legit? So I think Odell Beckham, it's hard not to consider the guy to be legit just because he seems to have some of the best pair of hands in the NFL already, even though he's just a rookie. So I love Odell Beckham. He's a guy that I'm keeping without a single solitary doubt. I like Mike Evans in the same category and Kelvin Benjamin as well, but I could see them more as sell-high options than Odell Beckham. Ultimately, I keep those three guys without thinking about it. Mike Evans is going to get a better quarterback next year with Marcus Mariota. Kelvin Benjamin, I think, is going to keep learning the route tree, and he had a little bit of a drop issues this year, but I think that's going to kind of go away as he moves forward. He's probably got the biggest potential to regress because of the drop problems, and because Carolina is very likely to add targets to that offense, but I still love the kid. I think he's a good player. Sammy Watkins, the injury issues scare me a little bit. He showed that he's a big play kind of guy, which I think is something that you can really appreciate when you're looking at dynasty fantasy receivers, those young, big playmakers. I worry a little bit about the quarterback situation. Kyle Orton's gone. EJ Manuel doesn't seem to be the answer, and while I love Rex Ryan as a coach and Greg Roman as a coordinator, I'm not necessarily confident they're going to be able to bring a young guy in that's going to really take the reins at the quarterback position. I'd be worried if they decide to go sign a guy like Mark Sanchez in free agency or Brian Hoyer. So Sammy Watkins might be the sell high kind of guy for me. Brandon Cooks, I think, is a buy low guy. I think people forgot how good he was because he got hurt, but he was very good beginning of the season. The New Orleans Saints are capped out. I wouldn't be surprised if they end up having to cut Marcus Colston or at least restructure several of those guys. So Brandon Cooks, I think, is kind of a buy low right now. Chris Sims, another kind of buy low just because I don't think his value is that high, but who knows what Tampa's going to do with the running game. You could see Doug Martin come back. You could see him be gone. You could draft somebody else. And then Carlos Hyde is a big buy low guy for me. He's the guy that I'm going to try to get Carlos Hyde. San Francisco is going to bring in a whole new coaching staff, one that's not afraid to play their rookies. And Carlos Hyde showed enough this season, I think, to convince me that he can be an every down back, that he can be the kind of guy who gets 18 to 20 carries a game. So I love him.
Yeah, I think Carlos Hyde is the target. It's there's so many like knocks on him coming out of Ohio State, and I was just like, when he got to the pros and I finally saw him play, I was like, what are they talking about? One of the big knocks was that he can't contribute in the passing game. Well, not only does he show pretty decent hands, but he's a much better blocker than they gave him credit for in the scouting reports that I was reading post combine for that stuff. Like, I was just like, man, I don't get it. The guy looks, pretty darn good to me, and Frank Gore's not going to last forever here. I mean, it's a great guy and a great player, no question, But, you know, you're talking about a 30, 31-year-old free agent now, and what's the commitment going to be? I could see him. I could see Frank Gore taking less money to stay because he probably loves it there, and he's such a good guy. But I, you know, as far as like performance on the field go, I'm if I'm in any kind of dynasty or keeper league, and somebody's a little bit, you know, down on Carlos Hyde, I'm jumping all over that. You were talking before about Cordarrelle Patterson. Boy, did I offered ridiculous value, like way over the top compared to what he did. I would have been kicking myself from now until, you know, next draft if I had done any of those deals. But everybody said no to me. I mean, I was offering like, you know, like a first round pick plus a guy from my roster. You know, I guess I picked one of three guys plus my first round pick, which was like in the middle of the, thank God nobody did that. I can't believe what's going on with him though. I just don't understand it. And a guy like Charles Johnson, I never even heard of him, comes out of nowhere, like a second year or third year player comes out of nowhere and becomes like Bridgewater's favorite target. Cause Kyle Rudolph never really got going. Cause he was hurt, you know, he's hurt so much this year. I think that, but you know, getting back to it, I think Carlos Hyde is the focal point of the buy low, you know, cream of the crop here. If you even want to call it buy low, I mean, most dynasty players are, you know, a true dynasty is going to have him valued a lot higher, obviously. But if you're like in that like 9 to 6 keeper range kind of thing, I think Carlos Hyde is a guy you jump on if you have the opportunity. How many fantasy leagues do you? That's what I thought. How many fantasy leagues do you participate in, Brandon?
You know, it varies each year. It kind of depends how many I get asked to participate in. Usually there's a couple expert leagues that 4for4 puts on kind of for the staff, and we kind of write about our processes. So those are leagues I pay a lot of attention to. Usually there's a standard and a PPR format. I've got a dynasty league that I joined a couple years back through some coworkers from a job I used to have that I care about. And then I've got a redraft league that I've been doing since 1994. That we still do by hand, that I do with family members and all that. I care a lot about that. And then I've got another work league. So I've got at least 5 or 6 and usually a couple more sneak in each season.
Yeah, we've got one of the ideas we were kicking around last week at the end of the podcast. We have one of our writers that is like in London or someplace. He'll get up at like 4 a.m. to do this with us, which is like unbelievable, or whatever time it is when we kick this thing off. And he's a really good guy. And we were just kicking around the idea of perhaps doing a, like a rookie draft, you know, a mock rookie draft pre and post NFL draft to see how it goes, you know, to get a gauge on number one, what we think the rookies are like now, and what we think that they'll be like once we absorb, you know, once we digest the situation that they happen to get drafted into. Would you be up for doing something like that? Because we'd love to have you.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm a big draft dork. I love.
No, I know that. I today I did some research looking you up and reading some of your stuff. So I understand that you've got a, you know, pretty darn good handle on that. So. I'm hoping that.
I have fun. Yeah, sure. You know, this is fun. It's I love to talk football, and I love to talk the draft. Yeah, something like that'd be a lot of fun.
Then I really look forward to it. I really look forward to it, and I appreciate you saying yes. I know it's kind of, I put you on the spot there on the air and asking you a question like that, but I guarantee you it'll be fun. We'll get a couple of 3 or 4 riders who know the game, who know the dynasty game, and I'm familiar with those. And you know, maybe we'll invite somebody else on and do like a couple of 3 rounds per episode or something like that. And anyway, we're pretty much out of time. We're pretty much out of time right now. And Brandon, thank you so much for coming on. It was an honor to be able to talk to you. And I look forward to speaking to you soon.
Thank you. Absolutely. I appreciate you letting me come on. It's a great show, and I look forward to talking to you again.
You have a great week. We'll talk to you soon.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.